I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Now it's time to head out on the road and grab a slice of Americana. It's the Nocturnal Journey on 720 WGN.
Okay, Dan Long, I got a road trip for us. This place, Skull's Rainbow Room, Printer's Alley in Nashville. Country music, murder, dyed poodles, burlesque performers, Paul McCartney. It all is part of their story there.
I love it.
So I was down there right around Christmas to see my brother. I ran into these guys. So here's David Wildman, one of the co-owners of the new Skull's Rainbow Room.
David Wildman, I'm one of the owners of Skull's Rainbow Room in the historic Printer's Alley in Nashville, Tennessee.
And I'm going to begin this interview with my story. And I was telling my friends from Chicago last night. It had to be the mid-80s. I might have been telling you this last night that a friend of mine, Angelo, who played drums at John Prine, brought me in here in Skull's. And it was Joey Girard was the opening act. He was an old burlesque comic from Calumet City. I remember I did a story about him. And then you had the dancers and stuff. But it was kind of and Printer's Alley was just, I mean, Bruce Randolph had a place down here then and stuff. Okay, so then that was then. And then maybe in the early 90s, I was down here for the Sun-Times. And I was covering the Country Music Association Awards. And I came back into Skull's. And I had a couple beers at the bar with Shooter Jennings, and he told me a little bit. And that's when I met Skull. And I mean, I didn't talk in depth with him, but a little bit about the hee-haw stuff.
Interesting fellow.
Yeah.
Interesting guy.
And then
I wish I'd have got to meet him.
Yeah.
I really do.
Okay, so that's my story. Then it closed. So pick it up there. What happened to Skull? What happened to the bar? What happened to the neighborhood? A lot of stuff there.
The whole alley, glory days, bad times. David Skull Shulman Skull was pretty much there all the way through, I do believe.
Yeah.
And I do believe he ran a bunch of places in the alley, the Black Poodle at one time, which was a famous venue.
I didn't know that.
And he eventually ended up with the Rainbow Room. I think the Rainbow Room was there before it was actually Skull's Rainbow Room. I think he took it over. The word is around 1948, and I think that he had it, well, until his sad demise, is that he actually got murdered inside Skull's. The location that we have now in 1998.
1998. He was always behind, well, I mean, he was behind the bar a
50
lot.
Years. The guy was there every day, rain or shine, apparently. I mean, it was his life, and I don't think he ever married. I don't think he had any immediate family. He had a sister who eventually, after his murder, she kind of auctioned off all the famous music memorabilia and everything in there, which we actually tried to recoup some of that. We actually bought some of the stuff back years later. But the thing was empty for 16 years? 15, 16 years? We got it a couple of years back. The thing was in terrible shape.
Yeah.
I mean, it had flooded in there and it had been on fire. I mean, all we're missing really is a plague of locusts, I think. It was almost biblical, the damage. And but there were certain things in there that were just ridiculous. The original stage. And after doing, like, the research on just the people who played there. I mean, that's kind of what
intrigued
me.
Yeah, what you were telling me last night. Who all played there? I love these stories. Some I didn't know when I was here before. Andy Griffith
was the house comedian for a while. Willie Nelson was part of the house band. But, I mean, the list of celebrities who actually went on that small checkerboard stage. Elvis, Johnny Cash, Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson.
Were they booked here, or did they just come?
I think some might have been booked when they were early in the career. I think some of them just wandered in. I know that Paul McCartney wrote songs in there. Paul McCartney moved to Nashville in 1974.
Yeah.
The whole Junior's Farm.
Yeah, right.
And songs from Nashville. But apparently he wrote Junior's Farm and the flip side to that record, Sally G. He wrote Sally G in there. It was supposed to be a girl who was playing on stage, and he kind of took a shine to the girl and wrote a song about her, and I think Linda was with him. I think Linda McCartney got kind of pissed about it, and he changed the name of it. It was supposed to be Diane G. It was Diane Gaffney. Pretty cool. I mean, the story is like that. It's just unbelievable. There was a night, apparently, after the... Johnny Cash was supposed to be a really good friend with Skull. And when they were filming the Johnny Cash TV show, obviously, he used to bring down whoever had been on the show that night, and they'd get up and play. So apparently one night you'd got... I do believe it was Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, Graham Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Joni Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were all on that little stage at the same time.
And that stage you have now, that's the original stage. Yeah. That's great.
I tried to salvage as much as I could. I mean, some of it was beyond repair, and some of it I didn't actually want to keep. I mean, there was carpets on the walls, and It's been a long time since there's been a renovation in there. It was an interesting place.
Now, tell people who Skull was. I mean, the Hee Haw connection. He was on Hee Haw.
He was on Hee Haw. I do believe Skull's Rainbow Room might have been the inspiration for the show, because he used to have a kind of variety show in there with dancers and singers and comedians and bands and da-da-da. And apparently he was influential in the development of the show initially. But he used to show up on the show from time to time. He'd pop up in the cornfields.
Yeah, right.
Even a lot of the clothes, the jackets he used to wear, they were all nudie jackets and Manuel jackets. He'd got the rhinestones and the logo. But everything always had the Hee Haw logo on it as well. So I'm sure he was a very influential player with them guys.
And you have those on display?
I do. I do. I have several of them. And they keep cropping up. Every once in a while, people will bring me one. I've got... He was famous for wearing the... like elaborate outfits. I mean, really, some of the things were ridiculous, actually. But Hee Haw overalls.
Yeah, right.
With a like bib and brace overalls. And he pretty much, any photographs that you see of this guy, he's always got a set of these overalls on with a different jacket. But I still have, someone actually brought them to me, two sets. One a worn, and one a brand new. One's still got the tags on them, which is...
Wow.
Which is kind of bizarre in itself, but I tried them on. They're horrid.
It's, you know, I did not know it had reopened. It reopened in June of 2015.
Yeah.
You dressed it up. It's a lot nicer than I remember
it
before.
We tarted it up a little bit. But, you know, the bones were there. It's an old building, of course. I mean, we're inside a landmark building, the Southern Turf building, with a basement of it.
Tell us about that building, actually.
The building itself, I mean, there's a lot of history. All this area during Prohibition, there was a famous bar upstairs, the Southern Turf Saloon, which is actually the building we're sitting in right now. And then this was the gentleman's quarter. I mean, this wasn't where the nice ladies came.
Now, not only is this, I just think the whole story of Skulls is fantastic and the stuff you've done, but I come to Nashville a lot, and I know how rapidly Nashville is changing and how rapidly Nashville is developing, and how I think that just historic preservation is really, really important. So I think it's really, that's when I walked into your place the other night, I just love seeing the history and the way you've restored and even the signs and stuff. Can you talk about how important, even just this whole little Printer's Alley area, it's like, it's important to keep this history alive.
I think so. And Printer's Alley itself is under a huge renovation. Like the word kind of got out that Printer's Alley was closed, and it's not.
Yeah, I heard that. That's what I heard.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre because the rebuilding the Utopia Hotel, which was a famous hotel down here at one time, and it was on the corner of Printer's Alley. So the couple of bars and restaurants that sat below it are closed for the time being while this renovation process happens. And then they're going to put bars and restaurants and whatever else underneath. I mean, it is actually going through a pretty major facelift. It just actually looks kind of decrepit for the short period of time leading up to this thing. Yeah. But it's going to be interesting. And like you said, I mean, Nashville's growing at such a rapid rate, and there's new builds everywhere. And I've always been a big fan of preservation and restoration on whatever you can do. A lot of the things inside the bar, I mean, I salvaged what I could. We took a lot of things out of there and then redid the drains and redid the electric and redid the plumbing and then brought a lot of pieces back in and tried to put the puzzle back together.
Yeah, that's what I wrote. I was taking some notes last night. It's a good thing we're not on the air with my hoarse voice. What was the most challenging thing about the restoration? I mean, what was the hardest thing for you to tackle? What was a hard bridge for you to cross?
It was a can of worms. It really was.
Yeah.
It took us 18 months to redo it.
Yeah.
Everything. Everything. I mean, it was, like I said, it was an old building. He'd had it for such a long time, and I'm sure there are a lot of things that wouldn't meet building codes now you could get away with then. So it was kind of a bit of a gut job. We kind of took everything out of it, and like I said, we rebuilt the bar out of the original garage doors that went to Banker's Alley, and the brass windows went back in, and the mail chutes, and the whatever we could, like you said, that original menu. I actually found that there was water damage behind the stage. I took the back of the stage off, and I found the original food menu, which is probably 8 feet by five. Hand-painted sign. It was actually patching a hole up behind the wall. There was all nails in it. They'd actually used it to fill a hole in. They didn't use it anymore. I mean, why go buy good wood when you could use that? And I managed to pull the nails out of it and kind of sandwich it between two sheets of glass. But I'm actually kind of proud of that thing. I actually like things like that. And even the jackets on the walls and the old photographs. And, you know, it's cool. Even like Tim McGraw. We had a party in there recently for Tim McGraw's his new album release, and did a bunch of radio interviews out of there. But he got his break in there. Skull, apparently Tim McGraw was ready to throw in the towel at one point. He couldn't catch a break in town.
Yeah.
And Skull gave him money and said, you know, stick around. I think you've got what it takes, and kind of kept bringing these record guys down to come and see him. And it's Tim McGraw. I mean, the rest is history. You know, it's kind of.
What's the capacity there? What is the whole?
140.
140. And the bar, roughly along the bar can seat about.
It's a pretty long bar. We get 25, 30 at
the
bar.
Pretty much is it the original bar? That's how I remembered it. I mean, it's laid out originally.
We actually moved it back a little bit. But, I mean, the basic layout of the room is very similar to what it was.
Yeah, right.
The location of the stage is in the same place. The catwalk area—it was a famous burlesque place. You know this a long time. So I mean, you got that variety show kind of thing, and but one of the big draws was the burlesque show and the strippers at one time. I mean, he used to do whatever it took to make money. The configuration, the catwalk that we actually built in there when they had the burlesque shows in there, they actually used to lay tables out in that sort of that format. So the girls would walk off the stage and dance. So we tried to mimic that. We tried to keep the original layout. I mean, it's very, very similar to what it was.
What was your decision to keep the burlesque?
I think it just ties in nice with the place, the whole vibe of it. I mean, the music that we kind of stick to these days, we lean more towards jazz. I mean, there's obviously a country influence at times in there, but anybody who's familiar with Nashville, I mean, Broadway is saturated with the whole honky-tonk thing, and it's great. It's a great night on Broadway, but we just kind of wanted to do something different, kind of roll back the years.
It was fascinating to me. You know, I come down here a couple times a year, even back in the 90s, and I met him, and the whole Waylon Jennings kid story always stuck in my mind. The place was so colorful, but it was a story, his murder was a story that really fascinated Nashville. I mean, every time I come down here, it seemed like I'd read in the paper something was, you know, they were investigating. What do you know about, did someone come in and hold them up? Yeah. And then, well, tell us about that. And it finally got solved, right?
Yeah, the rumor stories, the one that kind of seems to drop into place, and I actually talked to a couple of police officers who worked on the case. It seemed it was two guys. Skull was apparently a very generous man.
Right.
And he'd often get guys to do painting and whatever odd jobs he needed doing, but usually homeless people and whatnot. And he'd give them cash to do this for him. One of the guys, I do believe, actually worked for him at one time and knew that he used to carry a lot of money on his person. He used to wear these overalls, and in the top pocket he always used to have a big roll of cash, apparently. So I think that's... his generosity might have been part of his demise, that these guys actually knew that he'd got this role on him, or potentially. I think they came in the daytime, tried to rob him. The way it kind of appeared, he didn't want to surrender it, and one of them cut his throat with a penknife. He still didn't hand it over, and then I think they ended up hitting him over the head with a bottle of liquor. I don't think he died. He didn't die that day. He ended up in a hospital. They managed to get him to hospital, and I think a day or two later, he kind of passed. And then the guys disappeared. It took a long time. I think it was a fair few years before they caught up with them. They did eventually catch them. And I think if it had been a lesser guy, they probably wouldn't have gone to the extremes of finding these guys. Or they wouldn't have, like... But it was such an influential guy down here. Even on America's Most Wanted, I do believe Willie Nelson actually went on there asking for information on this. I mean, that's a pretty cool guy to be in your corner. And... yeah, eventually they caught up with the guys, and I do believe that they're still in prison. You were fortunate to have met the guy. I mean, I've only going on stories from other people and articles I've read. I mean, colourful character.
Well, I've been here 3 times in 3 days now. I'm going home tomorrow. But now I'm thinking that TV I'm thinking about it and putting myself back in that time, didn't he always watch that TV from behind the bar?
Yeah.
That little black and white TV.
Used to watch wrestling.
Yeah, right.
He was a huge wrestling fan. And I actually, the bartender who worked there, I'd looked in the archives, I'd looked everywhere to find great pictures to put back up, to set that vibe. And I got some good ones, but not everything I was looking for. It was about 2 weeks before we opened, and a lady walks in with a box, and she says, my name's Angie. I was the bartender here for 27 years. I've got these photographs. I don't know if they're any good to you. Maybe you could use them. And the photographs of this guy with everybody in there. Thank you. But yeah, there's some great shots in there.
Well, you got Waylon right behind the stage.
Yeah,
That must be Waylon and Jesse with Skull, yeah. Jesse Coulter.
But back in the day, if you look at the old photographs that were actually taken inside Skulls, he lined the walls with him, with everybody who'd been through there.
Yeah.
And you can see, it's actually fun looking in the background of these pictures to see Sammy Davis Jr. and Paul McCartney, Elvis. It's ridiculous, the people who'd actually pass through there. But yeah, I wish I'd have got to meet the guy. I really do.
But your eye and appreciation for detail just knocked me out. That's what makes the place sing to me.
Well, thank you.
It's a great tribute to a really important part of Nashville history.
And that was one of the things as well. The thing was in bad shape, and I wasn't 100% sure whether I should do it or not, because it's an old building, and you start touching things and things fall. It's like messing around with a rusty car. As soon as you start chipping the rust off, it's the only thing that's holding it together. And that guy was so influential in this town, and people still talk about him. He's nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yourself.
Yeah.
The guy stuck in your mind. The guy obviously was something special.
But we were talking about last night. You got a whole new audience now. I was talking to your dancer, and I was talking to my friends from Chicago. I ran into my friends from Chicago wandered in here. They didn't know anything about the history. I was telling them, how many people do you think know about the history, and do you explain it to them? And the dancer was even saying people didn't even know. She said, it's the Bible Belt. She said, people having dinner, and then she comes out and starts dancing. She said she's seen people walk out. How many people know?
The burlesque show is very tasteful.
It is. I was telling them last night, it's nothing like it used to be.
Yeah,
it was really bump and grind.
Heaven Lee's not there, and
Easy
Rider.
No, it was really sleazy before.
We wanted to pay tribute, but obviously, if somebody's eating dinner, you don't want to offend anybody. So it's a very mild.
It's very mild.
Fun show.
Yeah,
but a throwback to that whole Sally Rand era. Yeah. Some of the girls do the whole feather dance and that kind of. It's nice. It's tasteful.
It's very tasteful. Yeah,
but
it wasn't so tasteful when I was here in the '80s.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't.
We're going to take a break here for the news, and we'll be back live from Nashville with Katana Louise, who appears at Skulls. So don't go away. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. And calling in from Nashville, we have Katana Louise, who's a regular at Skulls. How you doing? Thanks. Are you there? Are you between gigs? Where are you calling from?
Yes. I am here. I'm actually about to do my first show in about 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, thanks for jumping in and talking to us tonight. And you heard some of that. Can you just talk about what you got from I asked you this when I ran into you there. About the sense of history of the place when you first came across Skulls?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So burlesque has been happening in Nashville, like we talked about, since the 40s and 50s. Shimmy dancers would play with jazz musicians in Nashville all the time, definitely notably in Printer's Alley, in Skulls Rainbow Room, which Skull Shulman opened, as well as the Blackpool Lounge and a couple of other clubs that he owned in Printer's Alley, but burlesque dancing is just as much part of Nashville history as a lot of the music is. It's really awesome to be in a city that where some of that art is still alive and is on its way up again. So it's really fun.
I didn't know until you told me. Betty Page was from Nashville.
Yes, she sure is. She went to Vanderbilt.
Isn't that something? Isn't that great? Now, we were talking, you know, Skulls was a dive when I went in there in the 80s and stuff, and it's not a dive anymore. It's a very fancy, upscale escargot, foie gras on the menu and stuff. I thought it was really fascinating. I mean, what's it like to perform in front of an audience like that? And I should set it up. I mean, there's a dinner hour where you have piano players, and you start at 11 and you do another show at 12. Is that how it usually goes?
Yeah. So right now, and you know, Skulls is only, what, we're approaching like 7 months of being open now, so under a year. So the way it's running right now is we've got one burlesque dancer every night. And currently it's the same dancer that does two acts a night. On the weekdays it's 10 and 11, and then on the weekends it's 11 and midnight. And on the weekends now we are now incorporating go-go dancing in between, so that's kind of fun. It's really interesting. You know, we talked a little bit about this. Performing at Skulls is different in that you're not purchasing a ticket, you know, as you would to go see any other burlesque show in Nashville. So a lot of the people here, primarily being in a, you know, in a tourist traffic-y area, probably the most tourist traffic in Nashville, downtown, you know, Lower Broadway. We have a lot of people that come and they just don't really know what they're getting into. They come in for drinks, dinner, you know, sit at a bar, and to their surprise, they get burlesque. And you know, it's different. In Nashville, there's a lot of places to see burlesque. There's a lot of monthly reviews at different venues. City Winery is one. Delinquent Debutante Studio, which is Nashville's only burlesque dance school, also puts on an uncensored review. So all that to say, you can see different flavors of burlesque. Burlesque is a very large umbrella art form that encompasses different genres. And so what you see at Skulls is kind of what I like to consider dinner-friendly dancing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So nothing too crazy, nothing too raunchy, as some people would call it. Nothing too dirt down and dirty. You know, something that you can watch while you're eating your dinner. I personally wouldn't mind a little extra bump and grind with my, you know, with my fancy meal, but, you know, to each their own. We do a lot of classic, what we call classic burlesque, old school bump and grind, the whole, I think David referred to it as the whole Sally Ranch thing,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So the feather fans, the boas, you know, kind of what you think of whenever you think of a showgirl. We kind of try to feed the whole atmosphere of what they've brought with the upscale dining and the beautiful bar and, you know, the grand piano and all that stuff all really comes together to bring a nice little package for each guest that comes in. And I think it's really special.
I can't believe in late December when I wandered in there. I mean, they've just done such a great job. It's such a I'm so over Lower Broadway for all our listeners who go down there and follow the Blackhawks, which a lot of our listeners do. I mean, it's just, you know, this is I really am excited about what's happening in Printer's Alley, you know.
Yeah, me too. I think it's really going to influence a lot of the stuff that goes up around here. As you know, most of it is what we call honky-tonking.
Yeah. Last thing before I let you go, I like the Chicago connection we stumbled across. You studied under Freya West, and she learned under who I know, Michelle L'Amour, up here at Studio L'Amour in Chicago. So tell me how you learned.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in Nashville for almost 10 years now. Nashville has had burlesque going on, obviously, for a long history. When I moved here about 10 years ago, there was a couple of active troupes. Music City Burlesque was one of them. Freya West is one of the producers for Music City Burlesque. And she and another dancer decided to open up Delinquent Debutante because they actually were experiencing a lot of women that would come up after shows and say, hey, I want to learn what you do. How do you have that much confidence? How do you learn how to move your body like that? And so Freya and another dancer at the time decided to open up Delinquent Debutantes. And, you know, Freya was very well versed under Michelle L'Amour, who is an amazing, incredible dancer. I would encourage all of you to go look up Michelle L'Amour, look up Freya West, look up Music City Burlesque. All these people are amazing performers. And, you know, back in, I guess it was 2013, so 3 years ago now, I studied under Freya, and we did a series of courses. And then at the end of, you know, those three courses where I studied the basics of burlesque, and she basically broke down how to, you know, come together with a concept, costume, and choreography, which are really the three main things that go into burlesque. All of the people in my class, quote unquote, had a grinduation, as we like to call it. And yeah, that was about 3 years ago. So we had a formal debut where I was rebirthed to the world as Ketana Louise. And it was really, really awesome. It was really special. It was a great way to get connected with the burlesque scene here and to just meet a lot of other really courageous women. And just kept getting booked and was lucky to know some great producers who put on amazing shows. So yeah, it's just kind of been rocking and rolling since then.
Well, it's really wonderful what you're doing down there. So I'd really encourage people to go see Skull's Rainbow Room and catch your gig. Thanks for joining us, Ketana. I'll see. Why don't you come on again sometime this summer?
Absolutely.
You want to do that?
It's nice to meet you, Dave. Yes, absolutely. Okay. That would be a lot of fun. Maybe we can have some of our other girls on too.
That'd be cool. And for more on Skulls, go to the WGNRadio.com website and DaveHoekstra.com.